Our next presenter is Melissa Gutierrez. She's an epidemiologist with the Sinai Urban Health Institute in Chicago. Melissa?
Good afternoon. Thank you for being here. Pardon my voice, that's a little on the rough side. I know it's getting late. I'd also like to acknowledge one of my co-authors, Dr. C. Whitman, who's in the audience, but he didn't do anything. So today I'm going to talk to you about a program that we has been over for about a year. It was funded by the CDC, and it's around reducing asthma disparities on the west side of Chicago. I do not have any financial relationships to disclose. I'm going to talk to you a little bit about the epidemiology of asthma and how it affects different communities differently. Then I'll go over the project, talk to you about some outcomes that we have achieved, and then wrap it up. So many of you may or may not know, but asthma is the most common chronic condition of childhood. It also it's one of the most costly conditions of childhood and results in the most missed school days in the United States. It also is actually currently on the rise. So some recent data was released in 2010 showing that the rate has increased, and it also increased disproportionately. So back in 2006, we used to lump Hispanic groups together, so that was all Puerto Rican and Mexicans, and the asthma rate looked pretty low. But then we were able to separate out those two groups, and now we see that Puerto Ricans actually have the highest rates of asthma, and then our non-Hispanic blacks at about 21%. And this increase is about 5% since 2006, and then followed by white non-Hispanics and then Mexican-Mexican-Americans just at about 11%. We also know that different communities suffer a disproportionate burden of asthma. So in the communities that we work, we found from a local survey that we did that 1 in 4 children have asthma. So it's predominantly a non-Hispanic black community that we're working with, or that this number is coming from. So if you remember that data that I just flashed in 2010, the rate was 21.2. We did the survey, it was in 2002, and we found that about 23% of children had asthma. So I'm sure that rate is even higher in this community. They also suffer a disproportionate burden, so they have higher mortality and morbidity rates. They're seen in the ED more frequently, hospitalization, and many of them we found that rely on the ED for their primary care. However, we actually can control asthma. Sometimes in these presentations, I like to show pictures of famous athletes or other folks that have asthma and have gone on to be extremely successful in something that we think might inhibit someone that has asthma. And we know that really through proper education and modifications of the home environment are the ways that we can improve asthma. So we've been doing this for quite a while. In fact, since 2000, we've had a series of 3 interventions prior to this one. We started out pretty small in the clinic with a randomized control trial, but we realized that we were missing what was going on in the home environment. So we did a pilot test, and then the results of that were extremely significant, so we did a larger sample. Here's, you can get all of this online, but just some data from all of those, and they're also available in publications on our website as well. But we continually show that we can decrease ED visits, hospitalizations, improve quality of life, and save money. I'll get into a lot of that data when I talk about this particular project. So one of the things that we, again, are always trying to improve upon our programs, realized that while we were in the home environment and looking at triggers, we didn't have the resources to really change those environments. So we had some funding from the CDC, and we were able to bring some partners together, and I'm going to talk to you about that. It was a CDC translational research grant. So we kind of posed as we would take the Seattle King County model and combine it with the work that we were already doing at the Sinai Urban Health Institute around our well-established community health worker model. And then we were going to incorporate meaningful engagement from the community and some of our partner organizations to assist with some of these aspects that we have been unable to. So this is a list of our partners, and they have been extremely helpful, and they also assisted us in forming a community advisory board, which assisted us in making the intervention more appropriate to our community. And this is the community that we're working in. Here's a picture of Chicago and the 4 communities that we are mainly working. That red dot is the hospital that we're at. Just you know, some of the things that sort of impede upon the work there is, you know, it's one of the poorest communities in Chicago. I already told you 23% of the children have asthma, 39% of the adults smoke in these communities, the universal trigger for asthma. But one picture I like to put up here is of, you may recognize this man, Martin Luther King Jr., and he moved his family to the North Lawndale community to work on civil rights and housing rights for the community members that were living there. So here we are 50 years later, 40 years later, still working on those same exact issues. So we were mainly looking at children in the ages of 2 to 14 with poorly controlled asthma living in these communities. And what we were, the model was to perform an individualized education via home visits. But this time we really wanted to spend a lot of attention on identifying and reducing triggers in the home. The intervention was really a community health worker model. For those of you that don't know about the community health worker model, I encourage you to read about it. But basically, we hire women, they've all been women, from the community. We don't require them to have any background on asthma or, in fact, any higher level education. We want them to have a serious connection with the community. Once hired, we put them through an intensive asthma education training. We make sure that they know what they're doing and send them out. And then they conduct 6 home visits over the course of a year. It's a comprehensive, individualized asthma education. We focus on improving medical management and reducing triggers. There's a home environmental assessment done at 2 weeks, 6 months, and 12 months. And also we work with their physician to get them an asthma action plan on file, their schools to get a 504 plan on file if they need to. So it's a very comprehensive intervention. We also make referrals out to organizations when we're unable to deal with some of the greater difficulties that families are having. And these are mainly around some of the housing issues. So many of our participants are renters. We make referrals out to our partner, Metropolitan Tenants Organization, and we also had a legal advocacy group that we were working with that could help us around some of the medical legal issues that some of these families have. So here's just a slide on recruitment. I won't get into the details of this, but essentially we had about 1,300 referrals and were able to actually consent or conduct a first visit with 266 of those, about 20% of the success rate. So recruitment can be a challenge, and one of the things that we're really started to look at is the economic climate that was going on at this time and why that might be so difficult. So briefly to go through some demographics so I can get into some of the outcome data, we're mainly working with non-Hispanic children. About half, a little over half were male, 91% are Medicaid insured, about average age of 7, mainly primary caregivers are the mothers. Interesting, about 35% had less than a high school degree. These are the caregivers. 29% had a high school degree. 43% of these families had an income of less than $10,000 a year. And then you can see 62% unemployed, and 70% of these families are single mother households. 94% of them reported that they did have a primary care physician. This is not how we conceive of a primary care physician, so they know the last doctor that they went to, but it's not someone that they really go to regularly. Only 15% had an asthma action plan at all and had ever been given one. And 81% of them were renters. So again, this is why we need some partners. 57% lived with a smoker, and you can see many of them had some asthma triggers in the home. And severity of asthma is pretty great. 3.5 of them having an average an ED visit in the past year prior to the baseline visit, missing about 9 school days in the year prior to the baseline visit due to asthma. So today I'm going to talk to you about our final outcomes, and 151 of the 26 people, 152 completed the 12-month intervention, but we have data on 151, so that's what I'm going to be sharing with you today. So our primary goal was to decrease asthma-related morbidity, so decrease the frequency and severity of asthma symptoms and decrease urgent health resource utilization. So this first slide is looking at asthma health resource utilization. So this is self-report data. At baseline, we ask in the past year, how many times has your child been seen and gone to the ED for asthma? And for these completing the follow-up year, it's about 3.3, and it's significant change to about 1 in the year following year. We also like to sum urgent health resource utilization. People utilize care very differently. Sometimes they're able to get in to see an urgent care clinic, sometimes an ED, and sometimes their asthma is so severe that they need to be hospitalized for asthma. You can see that on the baseline, about on average, they had 6 urgent care visits, and that was decreased to about 2.8 in the year follow-up. So, you know, just to put a bit of a human touch on this, if you can imagine toting off an entire family 3 times a year or 6 to some sort of emergency care and being able to more than half that. So this is an interesting data that we're looking at. So one of the kind of standards that we look at are nighttime asthma symptoms. So if you can decrease nighttime asthma symptoms, we know that a lot of other things are improving. So we ask at baseline in the past 2 weeks how many times has your child had symptoms of asthma, and then we ask that each month through the follow-up. It's a scale of 0 to 14 because it's 2 weeks, 14 days. So at baseline, it's about an average of 3.5 days. And you can see that there's this dip at 3 months to about 2. It's a significant decrease, and what we think is going on there is that at the baseline visit, we're able to get people to start taking their asthma medications. So they're able to understand what a controller medicine is and start taking it. And then you see that that stays consistent all the way through 9 months, and then at 9 months, we see another decrease down to 0, and these are medians, I should mention. And that change is also significant as well from the 9 to 12 months and the baseline to 12 months. So we think what's going on here is that that environmental modification that we're doing throughout the intervention really shows the significant decrease at the 12 months. So this is really why we think a 12-month intervention is needed more so that we can have a more permanent effect. So we also look at quality of life of the caregiver, asthma-related quality of life. It's the Juniper scale that's frequently used in asthma and other quality of life research. There's 3 scores, an overall score, an activity limitation, and a emotional function. So just a note, there's been a lot of research that shows that if you can increase this by 0.5, it's a clinically significant, you can see also it's associated with clinical outcomes. So if you're improving quality of life, we think that then a parent is able to take care of some other things, knows stuff about asthma, and feels confident in sustaining controlling asthma, and that's associated with clinical outcomes. All of these scores are also statistically significant. I've been doing this for 7 years, and these are the lowest baseline quality of life scores we've ever seen. And they're some of the lowest that you'll find in the literature. So again, I think this is really going back. This was happening right in the midst of economic turmoil that our country was seeing, but this west side of Chicago was seeing it, an even bigger burden. So again, these are all of our secondary outcomes. Now I don't have time to go into some detail, but these are sort of the things that we work on that then lead to the decreases in ED visits, the improving in quality of life. So we see a significant increase in the number of scheduled and attended asthma-related primary care physicians, improvement in asthma knowledge, reductions of asthma triggers, a significant increase of children on a controller medicine and that are also taking it correctly. A lot of people have controller medications, but it doesn't mean they take them or take them correctly. We see a slight reduction of smoking among parents, but what we do see is a significant reduction of smoking in the home. And then also we are able to have 90% of our children have an asthma action plan on file with their doctor and at home so they can bring it to their school and other things. Most importantly, though, besides that we're helping children live and breathe and get to be happy, we're also saving a lot of money. So we conducted a cost savings analysis. This is data of the actual payment that Medicaid makes to most of these children we're seeing in the hospital that I work at, Sinai's ED. So we looked at payment data that is actually received from Medicaid to the hospital. We used ED and hospitalization, so the average at the baseline compared to the average at the follow-up. And we've saved about $7 saved per dollar spent on the intervention. Said another way, that's $3 saved per participant. And if you take this a little farther, that would be $3 million saved for each 1,000 participants in the intervention in the state of Illinois. And we calculate that there are about 120,000 Medicaid-insured children in Illinois that would be eligible so that they have severe asthma. and that over the course of 10 years, by implementing a program such as this, we would save $1.8 billion. So if you live in Illinois, call your elected officials. So just to summarize, that this community health worker model, we're employing people from the community, we're empowering them to go out and educate their neighbors and children that have severe asthma, shows significant decreases in ED visits, asthma attacks, night sleeps disturbed, we're increasing caregiver quality of life, 1.10 points, so again, I said just a 0.5 increase was associated with clinical outcomes, and then it's also cost effective. So, of course, there are some limitations. There's no control group, except at this point, there's been so many interventions such as this that have been shown effective. I don't think you could justify having a control group. It might not be generalizable to other populations, but again, we've actually shown that it does work in other groups. The data collected is via self-report, so there might be some recall bias or social desirability bias, but there's also been some research that shows that that really isn't an effect. It is the intervention, we believe, that is making these differences. So our program has been garnered some media attention, which we really like. Both some city newspapers and local newspapers. We've won 4 awards for this program, both from the EPA and hospital awards. And the other thing that we really do is a lot of community outreach. So it's not just that we go into people's homes, we hold an end-of-the-year event, we do bed bugs trainings that were a huge problem in Chicago. And just a few conclusions. So asthma disparities exist in the U.S. It's really important that we look at local-level data, otherwise we're masking what's really going on, and therefore community-based interventions are the best way to affect changes. The issues that impede on a family's ability to make changes often are difficult and require varying areas of expertise, so I think partnering with other organizations is a very good idea. And then lastly, I can't speak enough about how much a community health worker model is really effective. They are immensely effective in establishing relationships with families and build trusting. Some other stuff. This is a really nice quote. But lastly, I just would really like to thank my colleagues. I just do a small part of this, and both Jessica and Steve are in the room, and the participants and their families. Thanks.